The prayer for the flourishing of all the prayers which I have told you before, that there is some lines missing, but just a few minutes before His Holiness arrived, one of the monks announced that a few lines has been missing, and he's already told which lines are already being missed. So we're back to Middle and Lumbar, page number 169. How to train in the Mahayana in general, developing the wish to train in the trainings of Bodhisattvas. With respect to the Vinaya and Tantra, it is inappropriate to listen to the trainings without taking the respective vows. However, the present trainings are different from those. First, you come to understand the training so that your continuum is purified. Then, if you feel enthusiasm for holding them, the vows are imparted on you. If you take them to mind as an object after having understood the trainings, and then take the vows, having developed a heartfelt wish to train in them, they will be very stable. That is why this is a good method. Having developed the wish, taking the vows of the victor's children, in the commentary on the ethics chapter of Asanga's Treaty on Bodhisattva Levels, so after this, as it is explained in the Bodhisattva's Ground chapter on ethical discipline, so accordingly we have to contemplate. In the commentary on the ethics chapter of Asanga's Treaty on Bodhisattva Levels, I already extensively settled how to take first the vows, and following that, how to guard against the root downfalls and the downfalls that are infractions, and how to restore the vows if they've been degenerated. Therefore, since the vows definitely need to be looked into before they're taken, you should come to understand these points here. Having taken them the way in which to train in them, this is three points what the foundation of the training is, although there are infinite clear divisions. When grouped together by type, all the trainings of Bodhisattvas are contained in the six perfections. Therefore, the six perfections constitute the great synopsis that condenses all the essential points of the Bodhisattva path. How the training are contained in it, this is two parts. The actual meaning, the definite number of the perfections, this is two points. The transition, the Bhagavan merely met a synopsis of six perfections, whereas Maitreya, the holy regent of the victors, elucidated as they have been intended, the essential points of the reasons for it having been met in that way and produced certainty, the way in which their number is definite is those very points. Therefore, when you find certainty which captivates the mind with respect to this, hold the instructions regarding the practice of the six perfections as supreme. With regard to the perfections, the number is definite as six. In order to bring the vast contact of a Bodhisattva to completion, you may need many consecutive lives. And in order to progress along the path in them, you need a support that is totally perfected in its features. Without it, even if you practice with something that merely has all the parts like our current support, there will be no progress whatsoever. Thus, a support that is excellent in all its parts is necessary. Furthermore, you need a support that is endowed with the four excellences, resources at your disposal, a body with which to practice, companions with whom to practice, and the ends of action that are to be undertaken. However, due merely to there being excellent, many become conditions for the mental afflictions. Thus, it is also necessary not to come under the power of the mental afflictions. But that is not enough either. You need to distinguish well the observed objects that are to be unmistakably engaged in and turn away from with respect to the essential point of what should be adopted and what should be discarded, because otherwise the excellences will destroy themselves. Just like bamboo and planting trees are destroyed by bearing fruit, and like a molly is destroyed by pregnancy. If you have wisdom, you will understand that the excellences are effects of the previous good actions, and you will strive for their causes again so that they will increase. If you do not have wisdom, you will use the effects you previously accumulated and thereby exhaust them. Since you do not newly increase them, they will become the beginning of the suffering in future lives. Hence, the emergence of those six perfections in future life does not come about without a cause, nor from a cause that does not correspond with them. And the perfections are definite as six, like their corresponding sequential causes. The resources and so forth at the time of other temporary high status, culminated high status, an excellent body and so forth exists on the Buddha ground. It is also stated that in ornament for Mahayana Sutras, excellent body and resources, and excellent retinue and undertakings in high status, and never to be controlled by mental afflictions and never be unstable regarding activities. The number is definite from the point of view of the accomplishment of the two welfare. This is 2 points. When you train in Bodhisattva contact with such a support, the activities of Bodhisattvas are exhausted in the two, those that accomplish one's own welfare and those that accomplish the welfare of others. These are 6 points. Specifically, in order to accomplish the welfare of others, it is necessary, first of all, to benefit them by means of material gifts. Since generosity accompanied by harm to sentient beings does not lead to anything, it is itself of great profit to others completely to turn away from actions that harm others together with their basis. Therefore, ethics is necessary. However, as that pure ethics cannot come about if you retaliate once or twice, unable to bear being harmed, the patience that in the face of harm thinks it does not matter is necessary to culminate ethics. Since you do not retaliate out of patience, others are prevented from accumulating a lot of negativities and inspired by that apply themselves to virtue, whereby it is of great benefit to others. If your own welfare is to attain the happiness of complete liberation through the power of wisdom, you should moreover place your mind in equipoise by means of concentration through not allowing your mind to become distracted. Thus, it is necessary to achieve the serviceability of a mind that abides on the observed object as long as you wish. Since this does not arise in the lazy, you need to set about it with a joyous effort that does not relent day and night. Hence, this is their foundation. Therefore, in order to bring about the two welfares, the perfections are definitely as 6. In ornament for the Mahayana Sutra, it says, great effort for the welfare of beings is made by giving, not harming, and patience, abiding and freedom with their foundation in your own welfare in all aspects. This does not comprise the welfare of others in all aspects. In the statement, abiding and freedom, the mind abiding on the observed object is said to be the work of meditative concentration, and freedom from cyclic existence is said to be the work of wisdom. This, when these two are distinguished, calm abiding will not be mistaken to be special insight. The number is definite from the point of view of the complete accomplishment of the welfare of others in all aspects. At the outset, eliminate the poverty of sentient beings through material things, following that do not harm any sentient being whatsoever. Not only that, be patient when harmed due to being their companion, act with undaunted joyous effort, rely on concentration and with magical emanations and so forth, provide whatever they wish for. When they have become suitable vessels, give them good explanations in dependence on wisdom, so that by clearing their doubts, you liberate them. Because of this, the perfections are definite as 6. Not holding back and not causing harm at all. Patient with harm, unthwarted by what's to be done. Joyful and well-spoken, that being the case. The welfare of others is also one's own welfare. The number is definite from the point of view of comprising the entire Mahayana. Thus, you will not be attached to resources you have acquired, and you will not view resources that you have not acquired with interest. When that is present, you will be able to guard the teachings, whereby you will take up the ethics and respect it. Due to patience with sufferings that arise in dependence on sentient beings and non-sentient phenomena, you will not be discouraged. Due to applying yourself to and delighting in any kind of virtuous activities, you will not be discouraged by them. You will cultivate a non-conceptual yoga of calm abiding and special insight. These 6 encompasses the entire Mahayana of migrating beings, for that is sequentially accomplished through the 6 perfections, and not more than those 6 is necessary. Not joy and resources, highest respect, not being discouraged regarding the 2, as well as non-conceptual yoga. In this all, Mahayana is exhausted. So back to Lamrim Chemo. Page number 113. Chapter 9, The Perfection of Generosity. The process of learning the perfections. The process of learning the perfection has 2 parts. How to train in the Bodhisattva's deeds in general, in particular how to train in the last 2 perfections. How to train in the Bodhisattva deeds in general is 2 parts. Training in the perfections that measure the qualities you will have when you become a Buddha. Training in the 4 ways to gather disciples that have others to measure. Training in the perfections that measure the qualities you will have when you become a Buddha has 4. How to train in the perfection of generosity. How in the perfection of ethical discipline, patience, joyous perseverance, meditative stabilization, and perfection of wisdom. How to train in the perfection of generosity has four sections. What generosity is, how to begin the development of generosity. The divisions of generosity are summary. What generosity is, the Bodhisattva level says, what is the nature of generosity? It is the intention accompanying the Bodhisattva's disinterested non-attachment to all their possessions and their body, and motivated by this, the physical and verbal actions of giving the things to be given. Hence, it is the virtue of a generous attitude and the physical and verbal actions which are motivated by this. Bringing the perfection of generosity to completion is not contingent on removing beings' poverty by giving gifts to others. Otherwise, since there still remains many destitute living beings, all the early conquerors would not have attained perfect generosity. Therefore, the physical and verbal aspects of generosity are not the main thing. The main thing is the mental aspect. This is because you perfect generosity after you destroy your stingy clinging to all that is your own. Your body resources the roots of virtue, and you completely condition your mind to giving them away to living beings from the depths of your heart, and not only that, but also to giving to others the effects of this giving as well. Thus, engaging in the Bodhisattva, this says, if generosity were perfected by removing beings' poverty, since they are still destitute, how could past savers have perfected it? Generosity is perfected, it is said, through the attitude of giving away to all beings, all your possessions, along with the effects of this. Therefore, generosity is a state of mind. Thus, the practice of the perfection of generosity entails generating in various ways the intention to give and steadily increasing this generosity, even though you may not be actually giving away something to others. How to begin the development of generosity? Simply destroying all stinginess. Stinginess in regard to your body and resources is not the perfection of generosity, for stinginess is included within attachment, and so even the two kinds of Hinayana arahats have totally eliminated it along with its seeds. What is required then is that you not only clear away stinginess, tight-fistedness, which prevents giving things away, but also that you develop from the depths of your heart the intention to give away to others all your possessions. For this, you have to meditate on the faults of holding on to things and benefit of giving them away. I shall therefore discuss this. The Moon Lam Sutra says, these children, people are attached to this rotting body and to this rushing life force, both of which lack independence and are like a dream or a magician's illusion. So these unintelligent beings do terrible things, fall under the control of sin, and then carried away by the chariot of death's lot, proceed to unbearable hells. This says that you should stop attachment by viewing the body as unclean. Life is rushing like a mountain cascade, both body and life as devoid of an independent self because they are under the control of karma, and both as false like a dream or a magician's illusion. Furthermore, if you do not stop attachment, you will become dominated by it, built of great wrongdoing, and proceed to miserable realms. Consider also the formula that accomplishes limitless methods. As to living beings who dispute with others, it is tight-fistedness that is a root cause, so renounce that which you crave. After you give up craving, the formula will work. The compendium of trainings is my body and mind move moment by moment. If with this impermanent body dripping with filth, I attain enlightenment which is permanent and pure, which I not have attained, what is priceless? And the garland of birth story states, this body devoid of self, perishing without substance, suffering, ungrateful and continually impure, is of benefit to others. Not to delight in this is not to be intelligent. Though you make much effort to care for your body, which has no substance, you have to discard it. By sincerely giving it away to others, you fulfill many of your own and others' aims. After you think, I will be a fool not to train my mind to do this. Whatever you can to produce the thought of giving away your body and life to others. Engaging in the Bodhisattva disease, by giving away everything, I pass from sorrow, so my mind reaches nirvana. As I have to give up everything, it is best to give it to living beings. And the compendium of perfection says, if you see the impermanence of resources and naturally have great compassion, you will know with great reason that the gifts you have kept in your house belong to others. There is never fear from what has been given away. What is kept at home gives rise to fears that it is insufficient, ordinary, or needing constant protection. If you give it away, these faults never harm you. By giving, you achieve happiness in future lives. Not giving brings suffering even in this life. Human wealth is like a shooting star. What is not given away will cease to exist. Wealth not given is transitory and will be gone, but giving it away remains treasury. Wealth of no value comes to have value when you strive to help living beings. The wise priest giving well away a childish person like to hold it, no will escape by holding on to it, and giving away always excellence arises. By giving things away, you no longer grasp afflictions. Being miserably brings affliction on an ignorable path. Noble beings say generosity is the best path, while its opposite is a bad path. If you dedicate from the depth of your heart all roots of virtue, however great or small they may be, for the sake of accomplishing both temporal and ultimately extensive benefit and happiness for all living beings, and then give something you obtain merit related to each living being, hence you essentially completed the collection of merit. Back to page number 118. Furthermore, do not hold on to companions and belongings that you have prevented you, that have prevented you from increasing your ability to give things away that you intense by your stinginess, that have stopped the development of previously absent inclinations to give, or that have weakened your inclinations to give. Do not take on these kinds of companions or accept these kinds of material gifts, even if others offer them. The compendium of the perfection states, Bodhisattvas give up all possessions that intensify the fault of stinginess, or that do not expand generosity. The deceivers that become an obstacle. Bodhisattvas should not accept jewels, wealth, or even a kingdom if it would harm their generous attitude and obscure the path to perfect enlightenment. When you act in this way, stinginess may lead you to feel attached to your goods. If so, become unattached by thinking. The sage reached enlightenment after he gave away every possession. Previously, recalling my commitment to emulate them, I give away my body, every resource, and all my virtue to all living beings. And I am still attached to resources. I am behaving just like an element, just like an elephant oppressed by the sun, who goes into the water and baths and then back on the dry land rolls in the dirt. Then again, after it sees that it is covered in dirt, it goes back to the water and does the same thing over and again. The compendium of the perfection says, recalling the superior deeds of the sages, strive with them and reflect on your commitment. Understand the following excellent thoughts in order to clear away your attachment to things. I give away all my body to all beings, then I relinquish the virtue of this gift. My being attached to external objects is senseless, like an elephant's bathing. If you are able to generate intense delight as you contemplate the many benefits of giving away things, and great fear as you reflect on the faults of tight-fistedness, you will naturally produce a generous attitude. Accordingly, generate the thought of giving away everything to others at the conclusion of cultivating love and compassion, or at the conclusion of reflecting on the life stories of conqueror, his children, and so forth. Engaging in the Bodhisattva dictates how this is done. I will give away without a sense of loss my body and my resources, as well as all my virtue from the past, present, and future for the welfare of all living beings. You focus on three things, your body, your resources, and your roots of virtue, and mentally give them away to all living beings. If you stop the craving that conceives everything to be your personal property and then repeatedly condition yourself to the attitude of giving it all away to others, you will be called a Bodhisattva. The compendium of perfection says, all this things are yours. I have no pride that they are mine. Someone who has this amazing thought repeatedly and emulates the qualities of the perfect Buddha is called a Bodhisattva. And so said the inconceivable Buddha, the Supreme Being. At present, as your determination is not mature and is weak, you do not actually give away flesh, etc., though you have already mentally given your body to all beings. According to the compendium of trainings, however, if you do not train in the thought of giving away your body and life, you will not become accustomed to it and so will remain incapable of giving away your body and life. Therefore, from now on, cultivate this thought. Back on page number 120. The intended meaning behind the compendium of training statement is that you incur cardinal transgressions when you sincerely turn your food, etc., over to a human being, and this person knows it and takes positions, whereupon you fully cognizant of being another's property appropriate them for your own use. Therefore, the positions stated by others are wrong. There is no fault in using some living being resources. If you think while using them, I do this for their welfare, the compendium of trainings states, there is no fault in using things if you think I'm taking care of my body, which is owned by others, with these resources that are owned by others. Slaves have no material goods of their own with which to survive. You may think I incur a fault because after I have turned over these belongings to living beings, I use them without their permission. But there is no fault. The compendium of trainings says, a servant who labors hard on a master's behalf might use the master's belongings without permission when the master's mind is unclear due to illness and so forth, but incurs no fault. Due to lack of faith and think mentally giving everything away to living beings while not actually giving it is a tantamount to a lie and therefore is without real substance. The compendium of training says some people who are close to a bodhisattva who practices in this way fail to understand the bodhisattva's practice accurately and lack faith. This is unwarranted because they are well acquainted with someone who has a great and wonderful spirit of generosity. It is wrong for them to doubt this matter. The divisions of generosity. The sections on the divisions of generosity has three parts. How everyone should practice this division of generosity relative to particular persons. Division of actual generosity. How everyone should practice it. Asanga's Mayana Compendium states that you practice generosity in association with six supremacies. Supreme basis means that you practice generosity based on the spirit of enlightenment. That is, you act after you have been motivated by it. Supreme things means that in general you have all objects that can be given, and even when you are engaged in specific acts of generosity, you do not give up this thought of giving away everything. Supreme aim is when you give things away to all living beings for the sake of their immediate happiness and ultimate benefit. Supreme skill in means is said to be when generosity is imbued with non-conceptual sublime wisdom. Beginning bodhisattvas should take this to be the wisdom that knows the lack of intrinsic nature in objects. Supreme dedication means that you dedicate the virtue from generosity to complete enlightenment. Supreme purity is when you stop both the afflicted and cognitive obscurations. Hari Bhatra's long explanation of the perfection of wisdom sutra in 8,000 lines says that you practice generosity with the six perfections present. When you are giving the teachings, for example, it is extremely powerful if you practice all six perfections. You have ethical discipline when you restrain yourself from the considerations of Sarvakas and Pratitya Buddhas. Patience when you bear any hardships while you aspire to the qualities of omniscience. When you are patient with abuse from others. Joyous perseverance when you yearn for the ever greater increase of your generosity. Meditative stabilization when you dedicate to complete the enlightenment. The virtue that you cultivate with one-pointed attention unmixed with Hinayana considerations and wisdom, when you know that the giver, gift and recipients are like a magician's illusion. The divisions of generosity relating to particular persons. In general, it is said that lay bodhisattvas make gifts of material things and renounced bodhisattvas make gifts of the teachings. The bodhisattva vows of liberation says, Shariputra, the renounced bodhisattvas who teaches just a single fallen stanza produces much more merit than the lay bodhisattva who makes offerings of Buddha realms filled with jewels, as many in number as sand grains of the river Ganges, to the Tathagatas, the Arahats, the perfectly enlightened Buddhas. Shariputra, the Tathagata does not permit renunciates to make material gifts. The compendium of training says the Buddha intended here material gifts that will become a hindrance to study and the like. It is said that renunciates are prohibited from making offerings of material goods that they have worked to obtain, but they must give them away if they obtain many things through the force of their previous merit and without hindering their virtuous activities. Also, Sharava said, I am not talking to you about the benefits you give, I am talking to you about the faults of tight-fistedness. It is displeasing news when renunciate harms their ethical disciplines as they strain to the utmost in their search for wealth to give away. Divisions of actual generosity. The presentation of the divisions of actual generosity has three points: the gift of the teachings, the gift of fearlessness, material gifts. First, the gift of the teachings is teaching the sublime teaching without making mistakes, teaching the arts and the like, and involving others in upholding the fundamental precepts. The gift of fearlessness is protecting living beings from fear of humans such as kings and robbers, from fear of non-human beings such as lions, tigers and crocodiles, and from fear of elements such as water and fire. Material gifts are explained in two parts. The generosity of actual giving material things has three parts. How to give away material things has four parts. Recipients of giving, the motivation for giving, how to give things to give. The tenets of this, friends and relatives who help you, enemies who harm you, ordinary people who neither harm nor help you, those with good qualities such as ethical discipline, those with flaws such as faulty ethical discipline, those inferior to you, those equal to you, those superior to you, the rich and happy, the miserable and the destitute. The motivation of giving us two sections, what kind of motivation is required? Your motivation should have three attributes, a focus on purpose, which thinks based on this I will complete the perfection of generosity, a precondition for unexiled enlightenment. A focus on the thing to be given, which thinks from the outset A bodhisattva gives away all possessions to living beings, so the material goods that I'm giving belong to others, and it is as if they are receiving things kept in trust. And I focus on recipient, which things, since these recipients, whether asking for the gifts or not, bring to completion my perfection of generosity, they are my teachers. The compendium of the perfection states, when someone comes to ask for something, bodhisattva, so as to build up preconditions for complete enlightenment, consider what they have as belonging to others, give it as from a trust, and consider the person their teacher. With respect to giving away individual things, I understand in detail from the question of Shaobu Sutra and the compendium of the perfection, your motivations focus on purpose, which is the thought. I will give this away for this or for that purpose. As to your motivation, focus on that recipient. Explained above, you should apply it to all situations of generosity, so it is the general motivation. Specific motivations will be when you make a gift to those who harm you, once you have established a loving attitude to those who suffer, once you have established a compassionate attitude to those who have good qualities, once you have established an attitude of delight and to those who help you, once you have established an impartial attitude. Moreover, you must be even-minded toward all recipients, gift away to living beings such as those who ask and so forth, all the virtuous results of giving, and in particular be compassionate to those recipients who are suffering. Chandrakriti says, once the giving is free from stinginess, the giver must compassionately make gifts, which are given equally with an even-mindedness to those who are superior or inferior recipients. The results of such giving go to both self and other at the same time. Holy beings praise this giving without stinginess to those who seek gifts. And the praise of infinite qualities is, even when some see a hopeful person who is destitute and of low birth, they do not care and out of desire for results seek other recipients who have good qualities. They have a base motive. Though givers, they are the same as those asking for gifts, you said. Hence, you remain committed out of compassion to giving to those who ask. What kind of motivation must be eliminated? A motivation that believes in the supremacy of bad views. Lacking this means that you do not give while thinking. There is no result from generosity, harmful blood offerings are religious. I am giving as I apply myself to what is good and beneficial. Or through just the completion of generosity alone, I will be free of mundane and supermundane attachments. A motivation that is arrogant, lacking this means that you do not give space. The person who asks for something, you do not compete with others. And after you give something, you do not considerately think, I am so generous, no one else can do like this. The purification of the obscure visions of Karma Sutra explains that when ordinary beings make gifts, they lose faith in those who are stingy, on account of which they get angry and are reborn in hell. So it is said that this obstructs generosity. When this ordinary person observes ethical discipline, they speak unflatteringly of those who ethical discipline is faulty, so they lose faith in many living beings and fall into miserable realms and on account of their loss of faith. And when these ordinary people maintain patience and the like, they speak praisingly of those who do the opposite of those and so obstruct their own ethical discipline and so forth. Hence, you should do as the praise of infinite quality says, at the times when you were learned and were intelligent, you do not praise yourself. You extol and reverse other persons for a few good qualities. When you maintain a mass of good qualities, you will cease on even a small fault in your own behavior. A motivation for support, lacking this means that you do not give with the hope of getting praise or fame. A motivation of discouragement, lacking this means that when you give after becoming joyful, even before the act of giving, you are filled with faith and then have no regret after giving. Even when you hear about the Bodhisattva's vast act of generosity, you are not discouraged but intensify your enthusiasm without belating yourself. A motivation in which you turn your back on someone, lacking this means that you give out of an even-minded compassion that is impartial toward enemy, friend, and ordinary persons. A motivation of expecting something in return, lacking this means that you do not give to others out of hope that they will help you, but because you see that these beings are benefit of happiness, burned by the flames of craving without the power to relieve their sufferings and naturally miserable. A motivation of expecting fruition, lacking this means that you do not hope for the fruition of an excellent body and resources in future lives, but because you shall see that all composite things are without substance but can contribute to unexalted enlightenment. Page number 128, how to give. This section is two parts, how not to give and how to give. Because I said these certain ways of giving, because they are to be eliminated, not giving right away, but only after you have delayed. Giving under stress, giving after you involve yourself in efforts that I could neither with the teachings nor with the ways of the world. Making a commitment beforehand that I will give this much, and later making a gift of reduced quality or amount. Giving in return for favors, giving in installments when you could give all at one time. As a ruler, giving away someone else's child or spouse that you have kidnapped, taking through pressure the belongings of your parents, servants, etc., and then giving them to others, making a gift by a method that will hurt someone else. When you remain idle, employing someone else to do the giving, giving while you criticize and have contempt for the one who asks for something, while you are indirectly critical in a way that implies contempt, or while you intimated the recipients with harsh words. Giving while you violate the Buddha's prohibited precepts and not giving resources as you acquire them, but giving them after you accumulated them for a long time. Indeed, Bodhisattvas see that it is wrong to give resources that you have stored up, whereas it is not wrong to give them away as you acquire them. This is because there is no additional merit in storing them up and then giving them at one time, because you turn away many requests for your goods while you are storing them up. You come to feel tormented and may give them to someone who have not asked for them. These points stated in the Bodhisattva levels are very important, for you can see that during the period of storing of the goods, you produce many afflictions such as stinginess and the like, that the trouble of safeguarding them and so forth becomes a hindrance to many virtuous actions, and that more often than not you lose them at some point and are not able to give them away in the end anyway. First of all, smile with a beaming countenance and then give to any recipient, showing respect by speaking honestly. Give with your own hands at the appropriate time without hurting anyone else, and bearing the suffering of any hardship. The result of this action is described in the chapter of Truth Speaker. By charity, out of a sense of service, you will receive service from others such as your relatives by using your own hands. When giving, you will obtain people who serve you. By giving when appropriate, you will accomplish your aims on time. And also by charity, without hurting anyone else, you will obtain stable resources by giving. While bearing unpleasantness, you will have intimate companions. Vasubandhu's treasury of knowledge states that from giving charity with your own hands, you get a vast amount of resources. The treasury of knowledge auto-commentary explains that stable resources means that others do not interfere with them and that fire, etc., do not destroy them. Furthermore, there is a way to help others to be generous. If you have some belongings, go to the homes of stingy people who have no experience of giving gifts even a few times. Joyfully and in a relaxed manner, direct them as follows. I really do own a vast amount of things. I want some people to ask me for things so that I can complete the perfection of generosity. So if you meet some people who ask you for something, rather than turning them away without giving them anything, take from my wealth and give it to them, or else lead them to me and then rejoice in my generosity. This does not destroy their wealth, and they do this with pleasure. In this way, they plant a seed for the removal of their stinginess. By gradually getting used to doing this, they will give away a little of their own wealth, and they will reduce their attachment a bit. Contingent upon this, they will reach a moderate absence of attachment, and contingent upon that, the great absence of attachment. In like fashion, by give belongings to your abbot, master, students, and friends who have a lot of attachment are incapable of giving, and to those who are not like that but have no belongings, and then cause them to make offerings to the three jewels rather than doing it yourself. By doing this, you produce a great deal of personal merit. It pacifies the afflictions of some, fulfills the desire to practice the teaching in others, gather beings around you, and cause them to mature. Similarly, if you have no belongings, you may build a wealth through a craft or a job and then give it away. Or else, you may tell others a religious story in which even the poor or miserly wish to give. Alternately, send those reduced begging to the house of rich persons who have faith and go there yourself to assist in giving of gifts to the extent that you are able. Also, as you sowed through the material goods for charity, give the better first and give away completely all the goods presented for charity. Things to give, the explanation of things to give is two parts. Brief presentation of the things which are and are not to be given. Detailed explanation of things which are and not to be given. Detailed explanation about inner things which are and not to be given. Page number 133. inappropriate giving from viewpoint of time, inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of purpose, page number 132, sorry, inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of the one who asks for something, detailed explanation about other things which are and are not to be given, how not to give outer things, inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of time, viewpoint of gift, viewpoint of the person, material things and purpose. Inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of time. Inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of persons, page number 134. Inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of the person is, for instance, giving away a text to someone who asks for it while you have a desire to understand it. You still have not achieved the purpose of the text but are free from defilement of the stinginess about it. Why this is inappropriate giving is as follows. Generosity, such as this giving out of teaching, is for the sake of any of three purposes: removal of your stinginess, completion of your vast collection of sublime wisdom, and fulfilling the vast aims of others. Given this, if you do not give the text, the later two purposes remain available to you. Whereas if you give it, they are not available to you. You do not need to accomplish the first purpose, for in this case you do not have the defilement of stinginess. So it is not necessary to remove this affliction. If you do not give it, you will see an increase in your collection of sublime wisdom. Whereas if you do give it, you will not have such a large increase. Furthermore, if you do not give the text, you will accomplish the collection of sublime wisdom for the benefit and happiness of all living beings. So you will be able to bring about happiness for this being who asks for the text and for all other living beings as well. If you do give it, however, just the one living being will be happy. This greater or lesser purpose is spoken of this manner in the Bodhisattva levels. Also engaging in the Bodhisattva disciples, do not give us something exalted for something lesser. So this is not that there is merely no fault in not giving it away. The offering. But the offering is for the great protector, Namjin Chuge. Page number 135, inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of material things. Inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of material thing is, for example, giving gifts such as your parents, food and drink that are bugs, a child, wife, servant, etc., whom you have not told, or even if told, does not want to be given away, or a child, or a poor persons of the sort who have become accustomed to comfort. Though it is said that you should not give your child, wife, etc., to a substitute, I have included them here among material things because the gift of material thing is from the form of generosity that is emphasized the most. The Bodhisattva level's compendium of determination says that even if you do not satisfy your request for your three kinds of religious robes and any extra belongings other than those which the Buddha has permitted renunciate to own, you incur no fault if you do not have a stingy attitude toward them. And if they are requisite to your cultivation of virtue, as it says, if renunciate bodhisattvas give for extra belongings robes other than their three kinds of religious robes that are permitted by Buddha are resources for their bodies and are conducive to maintaining their comfort, and do so after they have looked carefully at the persons who want them and ask for them, they do not incur a misdeed. Even if they do not give them away, they incur no misdeed at all, as long as their not giving is for the purpose of their cultivation of virtue and they do not have attachment to them. The Bodhisattva's vow of liberation says, Shariputra, if Bodhisattvas give away their three kinds of religious robes Treating the one who asks for them as more important than themselves, they are not relying on few desires. Hence, it renunciate Bodhisattvas giving away three kinds of religious roads, they incur a transgression. Inappropriate giving from the viewpoint of purpose is, for instance, when you fulfill a request for poison, weapons, fire, or alcohol, which is for harming either yourself or others. When you meet a request for things to play with and enjoy, but which are associated with a prohibitive reason, accumulating the causes for taking a miserable rebirth. Or when you satisfy a request for as a request to learn about pits, traps, and so forth for the sake of hurting living beings. This means that it is inappropriate even to give instructions about these things for the sake of bringing harm to the lives and resources of beings. Other examples are giving land or bodies of water when they are requested for the sake of harming beings that inhabited water or dry areas, giving political authority over these or other places for the sake of bringing harm to the human inhabitants, or when asked for such things by somebody whom you dislike, giving them instead to an enemy of that person. How to give outer things? You must give outer things if the timing is not prohibited by the teacher with respect to the recipient, and if giving the gift to this person is appropriate and suitable. Moreover, if you as the giver are a person opposite to that explained above and are stingy with regard to a tax, you must give it to a person who asks for it and who wishes to understand it. Even though you may not have finalized using it, this is to say, if you have a second copy, you give that, and if you do not have, and you should give the cost of having it copied out. If you do not, you should give the cost of having it copied out. If you do not have the money, you should definitely give the text of your thinking. Though by giving this away, I may be stupid in this life, it is all right. I will not acquiesce in my stinginess. As to material things, you should give everything except those things listed above. If you are a ruler and someone asks for other children, wives, and so on, it is inappropriate to meet the request by separating each from their families. But you can give them as a whole together with the family dwelling and the like. Likewise, I must meet requests for things to play with that do not become a cause of taking a miserable rebirth, traps, etc., that do not hurt others, dry our red places inhabited by living beings where no harm will come to the beings, and food and drink which do not have any bugs. You should give even poison, weapons, fire, alcohol, if people ask for them in order to benefit themselves for others. What to do if you are unable to give? If you are overcome with stinginess when someone asks you for something, think as follows. This material thing and I are definitely going to be parted by death. It will leave me and I will leave it. So I might as well take pleasure in giving this away and put it to good use, making a separation just as at the time of death. If I give this away, I will not have attachment to my wealth when the time comes for me to die. I will have no regrets and will give rise to feelings of pleasure and joy. If you are unable to give it away, even though you reflect in this way, then inform the persons who ask for it by means of three things that they should know. This is described in the questions of householder Ugra Sutra, which says that you should say, I am new to the practice of Mahayana and I am still a person of small ability whose roots of virtues are not yet ripened. Also, I am under the influence of an ungenerous attitude. Further, I have a strongly grasping view of self and constantly conceive of a self and that which belongs to the self. So, excellent person, please forgive me and do not make it difficult for me. So, I shall try to do just what satisfies your thoughts and the thoughts of all living beings. According to the compendium of the trainings, this is to eliminate further faults of each, losing confidence in the other, but it does not get rid of the fall of stinginess. A fault in Bodhisattva was that it looked down upon. Still, it seems that doing this prevents the cardinal transgression of not giving the teachings and wealth because of stinginess. Also, the compendium of the perfection stated, if you cannot give because your ability is so small, though the people come and ask you for something, so as to not make them feel low, comfort them with gentle speech. Henceforth, when people come to ask for something, do your best not to make them feel low and despairing, and clear away the fault of stinginess, earnestly strive to eliminate craving, relying on the remedies for hindrance to generosity. According to what is found in the Bodhisattva level's compendium of determinations, there are four hindrances: the hindrance of not being used to generosity, the hindrance of declining fortune, the hindrance of attachment, the hindrance of not seeing the goal. The hindrance of not being used to generosity is when you do not want to give to those who ask for something, even though you have material goods to give. The remedy for this is to avoid succumbing to the shortcoming of not being accustomed to generosity by quickly becoming aware, examining the situation and reflecting, this shortcoming is definitely the result of my previously not getting used to generosity. And moreover, if I do not make this gift, I will dislike the generosity in my future life as well. Then be generous. Page number 140. The generosity which is just mental. The generosity which is just mental means that after you go to a quiet place and then withdraw your mind inward with a pure motivation and faith from the depths of your heart, you construct with your thoughts an immeasurable vast quantity of diverse gifts, and you then imagine that you are offering them to all living beings. This increases merit immeasurably with little difficulty, and moreover is the giving of wise bodhisattvas according to the bodhisattva levels. Although it says in the questions of Sahabhut Sutra that this is to be done by those who do not have wealth, it is inappropriate for those who have wealth to do it as well. It is appropriate for those who have wealth to do as well. These ways for wise bodhisattvas to give when they have no resources are employed until they attain the first level, the level of pure wholehearted resolve, whereupon poverty in resources no longer occurs. For the bodhisattva level says, thus this is the giving of gifts for wise bodhisattvas while they have no resources and until they attain pure wholehearted resolve. Just as bodhisattvas of pure wholehearted resolve obtain a state which transcends miserable rebirths, so also they attain inexhaustible resources in all lifetimes. A summary. After you have taken the bodhisattva's vows, make aspirational prayers with respect to how to learn the practice of generosity on the high levels, and then train in these methods. Understand and learn what is permitted and prohibited with respect to the methods of giving gifts that you can engage in right away as explained above. In particular, one must rely on the remedies to stringentness with respect to your body resources and the rules of virtue. This is the excellent key point that sums up the meaning of the questions of Sahabhut Sutra. Back to Middle and Lumbrim. We're on page number 175. Page number 175, training in the perfections that ripen one's own Buddha qualities. How to train in generosity, ethics, patience, effort, concentration and wisdom. How to train in generosity has two points. The entity of generosity is a virtuous intention to give and the actions of body and speech motivated by it. It is the intention at the time the body and speech engages in generosity. The completion of the perfection of generosity does not depend on having eliminated the poverty of migrating beings by giving away to other substance to be given. Rather, it becomes the perfection of generosity through destroying the grasping of miserliness and thoroughly completing one's familiarization with the mind of giving to others along the effects of giving. Subdivision, this is two points. Subdivisions from the point of view of individual support. In Bodhisattva's vows of liberation, it is taught that generosity of material things is generally practiced by lay Bodhisattvas, whereas ordained Bodhisattvas should practice the generosity of Dhamma rather than generosity of material gifts. Moreover, in the compendium of trainings, intending that which interrupts studies and so forth, it says that the giving of gifts by ordained having worked for the sake of material things is prohibited. However, if they obtain them in plenty through the power of previous merits without harm to their virtuous activities, they should give material things. Sharava also said, to you I will not talk about the benefits of giving, but I will talk about the disadvantages of grasping. This is the talk of one who was not pleased that the obtained by giving gifts, having toiled to obtain and accumulate wealth and often damaged their ethics. The generosity of the Dharma is to unmistakably teach the holy Dharma, to teach properly without misdeeds, the wrongly aims of actions such as crops and so forth, and to make others engage in upholding the basis of the trainings. The generosity of fearlessness is to thoroughly protect others from the fear of humans such as kings, bandits and so forth, from fear of non-humans such as lions, tigers and so forth, and the fear of elements such as water, fire and so forth. The generosity of material things is to give material things to others. How to generate generosity in one's mental continuum? By merely destroying all miserliness without exception regarding one's body and possessions, it does not become the perfection of generosity because, since miserliness is included in the factor of attachment, the two types of arhats of Hinayana have also abandoned it without exception along with all its seeds. Hence, it is necessary not only to eliminate the obstacles to giving, the holding on to all things that is miserliness, but to generate the thought from the bottom of one's heart for giving away all one's possessions to others. Further, it is necessary to meditate both on the disadvantages of thoroughly holding on to things and on the advantages of giving. The former are as taught in the Moon Lam Sutra. Since the body is unclean and the life force fluctuates like water gushing down a stiff mountain, and both body and life force are controlled by karma, thus lacking an independent self, you should see them to be false, like a dream or a mirage, and cease your attachment to them. If you do not reverse it, you will come under the control of attachment, accumulate great faulty conduct, and go to the lower realms. The second advantages of giving are as taught in the compendium of trainings. In this way, my body and mind pass away in every instant. If I attain with this body that is tainted and impermanent, permanent untainted enlightenment is not obtained for free. This is 4 points. Engaging in the bodhisattva conduct describes how generosity should actually be generated. My body, as well as my resources, all my virtues of three times, I give away without sense of loss to accomplish the welfare of all sentient beings. Like that, taking the three body resources and the roots of virtue as your object, you should familiarize you again and again with the thought of giving them away to all sentient beings. Since presently this wish is immature and of little strength, you should not actually give away your flesh and so forth. Even though you have already given away your body in thought to sentient beings, nonetheless, in the compendium of trainings, it says that if you do not train in the thought of giving away our body and life due to the lack of familiarity with it, we will not be able to do so in the future either. Therefore, it is necessary to train in water from now on. Back to Lamrim Chamo, page number 142, the perfection of ethical discipline. How to train in the perfection of ethical discipline has 5 parts. What ethical discipline is? Ethical discipline is an attitude of abstention that turns your mind away from harming others and from the sources of such harming. Therefore, you bring about the perfection of ethical discipline by progressively increasing your habituation to this attitude until you reach completion. However, it is not the case that you bring the perfection of ethical discipline to completion in the external world by establishing beings in the street free of all harm. Otherwise, since there are still living beings who are not free from harm, the conquerors who sit in the past will observably not have completed the perfection of the ethical discipline and will therefore also not be able to guide these beings to freedom from harm. Hence, whether all living beings in the external world are freed or not freed from harm makes no difference in these contexts. The practice of ethical discipline is just habituation within your own mind to the attitude of abstention which turns away from harm to these beings. Engage in the bodhisattva discourse. Where can beings such as fish be sent where they will not be killed? So it is said that by attaining an attitude of abstention, you perfect ethical discipline. You perfect ethical discipline. Although ethical discipline does include have 3 divisions. It is explained in this context that the attitude of abstention in terms of ethical discipline of restraint, the principal division, moreover, in terms that include motivation, it is the 10 abstentions that eliminate the 10 non-virtues, and in terms of what in reality is, it is 7 abstentions which are the nature of the actions of the body and speech that abstain from 7 non-virtues. Chandrakriti's explanation of the Mittiblai commentary says, it is called ethical discipline because it does not acquiesce in the afflictions, because it allows no sins to arise, because it is coolness, since it quells the fire of regret, because it is that upon which the excellent relies, since it is a cause of happiness. Moreover, it is characterized by 7 abstentions. These are motivated by 3 qualities, non-attachment, non-hostility, and correct view. Therefore, ethical discipline is explained as the 10 paths of action in terms that include motivation. How to begin the cultivation of ethical discipline? As a person who generates the spirit of enlightenment has then promises to train in the Bodhisattva states, you have promised to endow all living beings with the ornament of ethical discipline of the perfect Buddhas. Therefore, you must accomplish the aims of all beings. In this regard, you must first develop the strength of your own pure ethical discipline. For if your own ethical discipline is impure and degenerates, you will fall to a miserable rebirth and will therefore not even achieve your own welfare, never mind the welfare of others. Hence, once you begin working for the welfare of others, value highly your ethical discipline. You need to sharply focus on safeguarding it and restraining your behavior to not be like the compendium of the perfection states. Those who strive to endow these beings with the ornament of the perfect Buddhas and ethical discipline initially purify their own ethical discipline. With pure ethical discipline, they develop powerful strength. And also, if you cannot achieve your own welfare with faulty ethical discipline, where will you get strength for the welfare of others? Therefore, those who strive for others' welfare do not relax their devotion to this. Moreover, such pure ethical discipline is based on the practice of what to adopt and what to cast aside. This, moreover, depends on the strong and stable attitude of wanting to safeguard your ethical discipline. Consequently, develop a desire to safeguard your ethical discipline by meditating for a long time on the grave consequences of not safeguarding it and the benefits of safeguarding it. With respect to the first, the grave consequences of not safeguarding your ethical discipline, the compendium of the perfection says, therefore see the unbearable fright and eliminate even the smallest thing that should be eliminated. Thus, once you are frightened by the grave consequences of your misdeeds, you strive to abstain from even the small ones. Think as explained earlier about the grave consequences of 10 known virtues, the coarsest factors incompatible with ethical discipline. With respect to the benefits of safeguarding your ethical discipline, they are as such explained earlier and as set forth by the glorious Ayasura in his compendium of the perfections. The divine substance is the resources of humans in which to delight, and the supreme bliss and supreme taste which are wonders of the deities. Does anything more marvelous come from ethical discipline? Even the Buddhas and the teaching arise from it. Furthermore, in dependence on ethical discipline, your mind stream progressively develops. Your training becomes the same as that of Mahasattva Bodhisattvas, who have a compassionate nature, and you attain the pure sublime wisdom that eliminates all the seeds of wrongdoing. When worldly ornaments adorn the very young or very old, they make this person seem ridiculous and are therefore ugly. No matter who has the ornament of ethical discipline, old, young, or in between, it delights everyone. Thus, it is the best of ornaments. The pleasant fragrance of ethical discipline's goodness spreads in all directions, whereas other pleasant fragrances must follow the direction of wind and are thus limited. A lotion scented of sandalwood which relieves the torment of heat is prohibited for renunciates, but a lotion which protects against the torturous heat of affliction is not prohibited and is appropriate for them. Someone who copies the outer appearance of being a renunciate, but who is jewel of ethical discipline, is superior to others. The compendium of perfection states, ethical discipline is the path of special attainment, achieves equality with those of compassionate nature, and has the highest nature of pure sublime wisdom. Free of flaws, it is called the best of ornaments. It is a pleasant fragrance throughout three realms and a lotion not prohibited for renunciate. Even those who copy appropriate attire, if they have ethical discipline, will be superior to other human beings. Page number 148. The ethical discipline of restraint. The Bodhisattva level says that ethical discipline of restraint is the 7 types of vows of individual liberation. Thus, given that there is those who have taken vows of individual liberation and are also keeping the Bodhisattva vows, the ethical discipline of restraint is either the actual vows of individual liberation for the group of either lay persons or renunciates, or it is a practice of restraint and by abstention that will be associated with those actual vows. Also, given that there are those who have taken the Bodhisattva vows who are unsuited to be recipients of the vows of individual liberation, the ethical discipline of restraint is the practice of restraint and abstention that gives of entity that is wrong by nature or entity that is wrong by prohibition that will be associated with the vows of individual liberation. The ethical discipline of gathering virtue. The ethical discipline of gathering virtue means that you focus on virtues such as six perfections and then develop the virtues that you have not developed in your mind, to not spoil the ones that you have already developed, and increase both of these ever further. The ethical discipline of acting for the welfare of living beings means that you focus on the welfare of 11 sorts of living beings and then accomplish their aims in this and future lives in a suitable manner without wrongdoing. Since I have already detailed this in my basic part to awakening, you should definitely read that over and over again. Therefore, since the rules of the vows of individual liberation are one aspect of the precepts for renunciates who have taken the bodhisattva vows, they are not set apart from the precepts for bodhisattvas. Also, within the three divisions of ethical discipline, the ethical discipline of restraint, the actual rules of the individual liberation vows, or the practice of engaging and what is to be adapted and rejecting, what is to be cast aside that will be associated with these views, is initially very important even for bodhisattvas. So train in this. The bodhisattva level's competitive determination states among the three aspects of ethical discipline. The ethical discipline restraint includes and registers the other two. And when you are neither bound by or nor protected, you will not be bound by other two nor safeguard them. Consequently, it is said that bodhisattva's ethical discipline of restraint degenerates, all their vows degenerate. If you think that the vows of individual liberation are for sarvagas, and if you cast aside their prescriptive and proscriptive rules and say there are other precepts, bodhisattva precepts to train in, then you have not grasped the key points of bodhisattva training in ethical discipline, for it is often said that ethical discipline of restraint is the basis and the source of next two types of ethical discipline. Furthermore, the principal aspect of the ethical discipline of restraint is abstaining from desire wrong by nature. Moreover, it is taught in all the vehicles, higher and lower, that this abstention from deeds that are wrong by nature is the abstention from 10 non-virtues, which comprise the course of major faults of the deeds that are wrong by nature. You must correctly restrain yourself physically, verbally, and mentally by not allowing a flicker of mere motivation for these non-virtues. So from now on, strive at these practices. We are on page number 150. Back to Middle Land Lumbrim, page number 178. How to train in ethics, the entity of ethics. Ethics is the mind of abandonment, that is, the mind turned away from harming others together with basis. This is mainly from the point of view of the ethics of restraint. Through thoroughly completing the familiarity with this mind, more and more it becomes the perfection of ethics. It is not that you externally establish all sentient beings in freedom from all harm without exception. In engaging in bodhisattva conduct, it says, achieving the mind of abandonment is taught as perfection of ethics. It has three points. The ethics of restraint, from the point of view, is being accompanied by our motivation, is the 10 abandonments that abandon the 10 non-virtues. From the point of view of its entity, it is the 7 abandonments of body and speech that abandon the 7 non-virtues. This is the intention of bodhisattva levels in stating that ethics of restraint in the continuum of bodhisattva is the 7 types of the vows of individual liberation. When this possessing the vows of individual liberation possesses the bodhisattva vows, the ethics of restraint is the actual vows of individual liberation of the class of laity, or the ordained and the abandonments and the vows that are common to them in their continuum. When those who are unsuitable as a support for the vows of individual liberation possess bodhisattva vows, the ethics of restraint is abandonments and the restraint of abandoning either the natural mysteries or the formulated mysteries that are common to individual liberation. Although the vows of individual liberation in the continuum of a bodhisattva are vows of ethic in the continuum of bodhisattva, they are not actual bodhisattva vows, whereas the rest have a common basis with the bodhisattva vows. The ethics of gathering virtuous qualities is to observe virtues such as the 6 perfections and to generate that which has not yet arisen in one's own continuum, to not degenerate that which has arisen and to increase it more and more. The ethics of bringing about the welfare of sentient being is to accomplish the welfare of sentient being in this and future lives through the ethics without any mysteries as appropriate. Pure ethics depends on practicing what should be engaged in and countered according to the formulated rules of the Buddha. Furthermore, it follows the strong and firm wish to guide ethics. For it to arise, you must meditate for a long time on the disadvantages of not guarding it and the advantages of guarding it. This was explained above in the context of intermediate beings. Moreover, in the Compendium of Perfection, it also says, you cannot attain your own with degenerate discipline, so where will you get the power of others' welfare? Therefore, it is inappropriate, so strive well. For others' welfare, to loosen your respect for it, and this is the special path of attainment. Accomplish it like the natural compassionate, it is of the excellent nature of pure wisdom. Free from errors, it's called the best of ornaments. Pleasant fragrance, guarded in all three realms, it is a balm not at odds with ordination. Those who are ethically disciplined, though conforming, outwardly it will be nobles who among humans. This is that in dependence on ethics, your mental continuum improves more and more. You become similar in training to the great beings who are naturally compassionate, who attain the pure exalted wisdom that has abandoned all sorts of faulty conduct, although other ornaments do not beautify the very young or very old. The ornament of ethics is the supreme ornament for whoever possesses it, whether young, old, or in between, since it pleases everyone. Although other fine fragrances only spread in the direction of wind and do not spread in other directions whereby they are limited, the scent of ethics fame spreads in all directions. Although ointments such as sandalwood, which cool the torment of heat, contradicts ordination, the ointment that protects from the torment of the heat of the afflictions does not contradict ordination, that rather accords with it. And even though you only seem to have the science of ordination to be endowed with the jewels of ethics, is more excellent than anything else. Again from the same text, without expressing a word, without much effort, resources and services needed for practice together, the world bows low without intimidation, power and wealth again without effort and work. Although this lineage may be unworthy of mention, although he did not help or benefit them, all beings, including the ones he never knew, bow to a being endowed with ethics. Even the dust made auspicious by his feet is raised to the head for his sanctity. Gods and humans prostrate, so it touches their heads and carry it elsewhere. Thus, one should think about the advantages as expressed here. This is 3 points. Although there are 3 kinds of ethics, the ethics of restraint, practicing the engagement and avoidance concerning the formulated rules of individual liberation or what is common to them, is itself important for bodhisattvas in the beginning. I think I shall read the songs of experience. The shortest version of Lamrim. Generosity is a wish-fulfilling gem that satisfies the hope of wanderers, a supreme weapon that cuts the knot of miserliness. The bodhisattva did the generous, unfailing courage and the foundation of glory that roars in the 10 directions. Knowing this, the learned ones cultivate the noble path of giving one's body, position, and virtues. I, a yogi, practice in this way. He who seeks liberation should do likewise. Ethics are water that cleanses the streams of misdeeds, the moonlight that soothes the tormented heat of delusions. One stands majestically like Mount Meru amid sentient beings without intimidation. All beings bow down to you. Knowing this, worthy ones guarded their world, adopted ethics like their eye, a yogi practice in this way, you should do likewise. Patience is the finest ornament of powerful ones, the best ascetic practice for the tormenting afflictions, the Garuda, enemy of the snake of hatred, the steady armor against the weapons of harsh speech. Knowing this, by various means they cultivate the excellent armor of patience, a yogi practice in this way, you should liberation and should do likewise. If one dons the armor of unwearying joyous effort, the virtues of scriptural knowledge and insight will grow like the waxing moon. All activities become meaningful. Every work begun will be accomplished as desired. Knowing this, the bodhisattvas practice great joyous effort which disciplines all laziness. I, yogi, practice this way. You who seek liberation should do likewise. Meditative concentration is the king that rules the mind. When remaining focused, it is immovable like the king of mountains. When directed, it engages with all objects of virtues. mind and induce irresistible bliss for body and mind. Knowing this, the great yogas always rely upon samadhi, the destroyer of the enemy of mental destruction. I, a yogi, present this way. This should live rich and should do likewise. Wisdom is eye through which to see profound reality, the path that eliminates the root of samsara, the treasury of virtuous priests and all the scriptures, renowned as the excellent lamp that dispels the darkness of ignorance. Knowing this, a learned one who seeks liberation dedicate every effort to generate the path. I, a yogi, practice in this way. You who seek liberation should do like this. The perfection of patience, back to Lamrim Chemo, we're in page number 151. How to train in the perfection of patience, F5. The explanation of how to train in the perfection of patience, F5 parts. Well, the patient is how to begin the cultivation, the division, how to practice, and a summary. Patience is disregarding harm done to you, accepting the suffering arising in your mind stream, and being certain about the teachings and firmly maintaining belief in them. There are three sets of factors incompatible with this. For the first, hostility. For the second, hostility and loss of courage. And for the third, disbelief and dislike. Perfecting patience means that you simply complete your conditioning to a state of mind wherein you have stopped your anger and the like. It is not contingent upon all living beings become free from undisciplined conduct, because you will not be able to bring this about, and because you accomplish your purpose just by disciplining your own mind, engaging in the bodhisattva districts. Undisciplined persons are as limitless as space. You could never overcome them. If you conquer the single mental state of anger, it is like vanquishing all your enemies. Where could you get enough leather to cover the entire surface of the earth? Wearing just a leather with your sandals is just covering all the earth. Similarly, I cannot change external things, but when I can change my state of mind, why do I need to change anything else? How to begin the cultivation of patience. Although there are many ways to cultivate patience, to begin, I will explain the meditation of the benefits of patience and the faults of not being patient. The benefits are set forth in the bodhisattva levels. Initially, bodhisattvas consider the benefits of patience. They think persons who are patient will not have many enemies later on, but will have many separations from those to whom they are close. They will have much happiness and contentment. They will have no regret at all at the time of death. And upon the disintegration of their bodies, they will also be reborn among the deities in the happy realms of high status. By looking at such benefits, they too are patient. They engage others in unfolding patience, and they also praise patience. When they see patient persons, they are delighted and full of joy. The compendium of perfection says, it is said, patience is the best approach for dealing with the inclination to disregard others' welfare. Patience against the fall of anger protects all that is excellent in this world. Patience is the best ornament of the powerful, the greatest strength for those who practice asceticism, and a stream of water on the wildfire of malice. Patience clears macham and the arrow of undisciplined people's words are dulled by a superior being's armor of patience. These unruly people then give pleasant flower of praise, which become attractive garlands of fame. And also, patience is also the craftsman that creates a Buddha's embodiment of form and drawn with the beautiful signs of good qualities. Thus, Arya Sura praises patience by way of its many benefits. It stops you from turning away from others' welfare on account of living beings' misperceptions. It protects you from anger, the enemy that destroys many roots of the virtue. It is a captivating ornament because it endures the harm of those of little power. It is the excellent strength of ascetics who are tormented by their afflictions. It is a stream of water that extinguishes the wine fire of malice. It is armor that cannot be pierced by the arrows of undisciplined persons' misperceptions. It is the skilled artisan who creates a fine form of golden color that captivates the eye and minds of beings. Furthermore, engaging in the bodhisattva deed states, whoever works hard and overcomes anger is happy in this and future lives. When you rely on patience continually, you do not spoil your joyful attitude, so you are always happy even in this life. Moreover, patience stops miserable rebirths in future lives, gives spiritual rewards in heavy realms, and ultimately bestows certain goodness, so you are utterly happy in this and future lives. Meditate on this benefit until you gain a strong firm certainty about the cause and effect relation wherein benefits such as this arise from patience. With respect to the faults of anger, the invisible faults are as follows. Engaging in the bodhisattva deeds, any good deeds such as generosity in worshipping the Sugathas you have collected over 1,000 aeons are all destroyed in one moment of anger. Arya Surya formulated this exactly as presented engaging in the bodhisattva deeds. The play of Manjushri Sutra mentions the destruction of virtue accumulated over 100 aeons, and also Chandrakriti's commentary on the middle way says that the virtue accumulated over 100 aeons of conditioning to the perfections of generosity and ethical discipline is destroyed even by the generation of just a momentary angry thought. Concerning who or what the recipient of such destructive anger must be, some say that it must be bodhisattvas, while others say that it is the recipients in general. The former echoes the statement in the commentary on Middle Way. Therefore, a moment's angry towards a concurrent channel destroys the virtue arising from generosity and ethical discipline accumulated over 100 eons. With respect to the person who gets angry, Chantukriti's explanation of the Middle Way commentary says that if anger even by bodhisattvas destroys their roots of virtue, it goes without saying that the anger of non-bodhisattvas towards bodhisattva does. Regardless of whether the recipient of the anger is ascertained to be a bodhisattva or whether the perceived faults that cause the anger are real, the destruction of virtue is said nonetheless to be just as explained above. In general, for there to be destruction of the root of virtue, it is not required that the anger be toward bodhisattvas. The compendium of training says, the text of Arya, Sarvativadin also says, the Bhagavan said, monks consider a monk who make a full prostration to a stupa that contains the Buddha's hair and nails and who has an attitude of faith, so be it reverent. Amongst them, this monk will experience reigns as a universal monarch 1,000 times. The number of grains of sand 84,000 leagues under the ground is prostrate body covers down to the depths of gold that supports the earth. Ubali, when such a scene is malice is done to fellow practitioner, it is like a wound or meaning. I cannot see its full effect. Ubali, this diminishes, erases and extinguishes those great roots of virtue. Is it I cannot see or I can see? So His Holiness is just confirming. So is I cannot see its full impact. Ubali, this diminishes, erases and extinguishes those great roots of virtue. Therefore, Ubali, if you will not feel malice toward a burning stump, what need to mention feeling that towards a body with consciousness? Some scholars position the meaning of destroying the roots of virtue is that in destroying the capacity of previous virtues to issue their effect speedily, you delay the essence of the effect. So anger, for instance, will give its effect first, but it is certainly not the case that the seeds of the roots of virtue will not issue effects when the latter met with the requisite conditions, because given that no mountain bath can eliminate the seeds that are to be eliminated, it is impossible to have an elimination of the seeds of the afflictions. This reasoning is unsound, because even the purification wherein ordinary beings clear away non-virtue by means of its remedy, the four powers of confession is not an elimination of seeds nevertheless. Though the seeds of this non-virtue may later meet with the requisite conditions, they cannot issue a fruition. Even virtuous and non-virtuous karma that are spent upon issuing their individual fruition does not lose their seeds. Nevertheless, even when the seeds of such karma meet henceforth with the requisite condition, it is impossible for fruition to arise. And when you attain the peak and forbearance level of the path of preparation, you do not eliminate the seeds of non-virtue that cause wrong views and miserable births. Nevertheless, even though the seeds of this non-virtue may meet with the relaxed conditions, they cannot give rise to wrong views or a miserable rebirth. Furthermore, the reasoning is unsound, because as the elder citation says, as to the actions that give rise to cyclic existence, they are those that are weighty, those that are near, those to which you are habituated, and those which you did earliest. Among these, the former will ripen first. Any virtuous or non-virtuous actions that comes to fruition does not temporarily stop the opportunity for the fruition of another action. However, it is not said or not can be established that a mere preceding fruition destroys virtue or non-virtue, nor is it appropriate for destroying the roots of virtue to mean the mere temporary postponement of fruition. Otherwise, it should absolutely follow that all powerful non-virtuous actions must be considered a destroyer of the roots of the virtue. Therefore, concerning this, the Master Bhava Viveka states that in the case of both the purification of non-virtue by the four powers of confession and the destruction of roots of virtue by wrong views and malice, the seeds of the virtue and non-virtue cannot give rise to effect, even though they may later meet with the requisite conditions, such as spoiled seeds will not give rise to sprouts, even though they may meet with requisite conditions. Moreover, as already explained, even though you cleanse your accumulation of sins through purification by the four powers, this does not contradict the fact that you are slow to produce higher prats. Accordingly, for some persons, anger destroys, for instance, their resources and excellent body, the respective effects of giving gifts and safeguarding ethical discipline, but is unable to destroy their ability to easily produce roots of virtue. Again, through giving gifts and safeguarding ethical discipline by means of casually casually concordant behavioral effect of their habituation to generosity and attitude of abstention. For other persons, anger destroys the continuous occurrence of a similar type of casually concordant behavior like ethical self-discipline and so on, but did not destroy the occurrence of an excellent body resources and so forth. Some realize a path through which they progress to perfection within 1 year, and for instance, if they did not generate anger toward a bodhisattva, which has obtained a prediction of his or her upcoming enlightenment, if they produce a single angry thought towards such a bodhisattva, this path is not explained from their minds, but their progress on the path becomes slow for the length of events. Page 158, engaging in the bodhisattva district. In the grasp of the mental pains of hate, your mind does not experience peace. You do not find joy or experience. Sleep down must come. Sleep does not come, and you become unstable. Even those who depend on a master who cares for them with well and services will overcome and kill. A master who gets angry has anger. His anger disheartens friends. Though he gathers people with gifts, they will not serve in him. No angry person is happy. The gallant Bhatsura also says, when your complexion is spoiled by the fire of anger, you cannot look good. Though adorned with jewelry, you may sleep on a good bed. Your mind suffers the sharp pains of anger. The last paragraph. Meditate until you are firmly convinced that the grave consequences such as this arise from anger. Thus engaging in the bodhisattva did says, there is no sin like hatred and no fortitude like patience. Therefore, earnestly cultivate the patience in a variety of ways. First, understand the benefits and faults, and then strive to cultivate patience in many ways. The reason behind the first line is set forth in Chandrakriti's explanation of the middle way commentary. You cannot measure the fruition of fruits of anger just as you cannot measure the water in an ocean with a balanced scale. Therefore, for projecting unpleasant effects and damaging virtue, there is no sin greater than lack of patience. For all the other sins result in extremely unpleasant fruition, they are not great sins on that account alone, and given that they do not destroy roots of worship. So there are many wrongs other than anger that combine in both production material for terrible fruition and destruction of the roots of virtue, wrong views that deny cause and effect, abandoning the sublime teachings, generating pride in relation to bodhisattvas, gurus and the like, and thus terribly belittling them, and so forth. You can know of this from the compendium of the trainings. The division of patience, developing the patience of disregarding harm done to you. Developing the patience of disregarding harm done to you has two parts. Stopping impatience with those who harm you has two parts. Stopping impatience with those who prevent your happiness and those who cause you to suffer. Stopping impatience with those who prevent your praise, fame or honor, and with those who have contempt for you or say offensive or unpleasant things to you. Stopping impatient with those who prevent your happiness and with those who causes you to suffer is too much, showing that anger is unjustified and compassion is appropriate. Showing that anger is unjustified is three parts. On analysis of the object, anger is unjustified. On analysis of subject and also on an analysis of basis, anger is unjustified. On analysis of the object, anger is unjustified. On analysis of whether the object has self-control, anger is unjustified. Analyze thinking, what will be reasonable grounds for anger toward harm doers? Whereupon you might think, they first say the thought of wanting to harm me, prevent the method, and then either prevent my happiness or inflict unpleasant physical or mental suffering. So my anger is justified. Are you angry because they inflicted harm while they had the self-control not to harm you? Or are you angry because they are utterly without any self-control and hurt you while helplessly impelled by something else? In the former case, your anger is unjustified because those who inflict the former case, your anger is unjustified because those who inflict harm does not have control over themselves. For when the conditions and causes seeds, life affliction to which they were previously habituated, a neighbor, object, and inner conceptions come together, they give rise to the thought to harm, even though the harmdoers do not think. I will feel malice, whereas if those causes and conditions are not complete, they will never produce the thought to harm, even if the harmdoers think, I will feel malice. These causes and conditions produce the desire to harm. This in turn produces the work of harming, and this produces suffering for someone else. So those harmdoers do not even the slightest self-control. Moreover, they have become like servants of their afflictions because they are under the control of others. That is their afflictions. In the latter case, you are angry because the harmdoers are utterly without any self-control and being helplessly impelled by something else, they hurt you, then your anger is totally unjustified. For instance, some people who have been possessed by demons have come under their control may wish to hurt those who are helping them to get free of their demons and thereupon beat them, etc. However, they help us think, They do this because their demons have eliminated their ability to control themselves and do not have even the slightest anger toward them. They then strive to the best of their ability to free them from their demons likewise. When bodhisattvas are hurt by others, they think they do this because the demons of the afflictions have eliminated their ability to control themselves. Without being even the slightest bit angry with those persons, they then must generate the spirit of enlightenment, thinking, I will strive at the bodhisattva deeds in order to free them from those afflictions. Accordingly, Aryadeva's 400 stanzas says, just as a doctor does not fight but helps patients who are possessed by spirits, though they get angry, so the sage sees that afflictions are at fault, not the person who have the afflictions. The master Chandrakriti also said, this is not living being fault, rather it's a fall of afflictions. So the learned analyze and do not fight with others. Page number 162, engaging in the bodhisattva distress, thus everything is dependent on something else, and because that in turn is dependent, it is not autonomous. Understanding this, do not be angry, and at anything, all things like, all being like illusion. And also, therefore, if you see an enemy or a friend doing what is wrong thing, this arises from certain conditions, and remain happy. If all beings could achieve results according to their wish, then since no one wants suffering, no one will suffer. And so while under the control of their affliction, some people will kill even their dear selves. So how can you expect them not to harm the bodies of others? On analysis for either advantageous or inherency, anger is unjustified. The fault of doing harm to others either is or is not in the nature of living beings. If it is in their nature, it is wrong to get angry, just as it is wrong to get angry at fire for being hot and burning. Similarly, if it is advantageous, it is also wrong to be angry, just as when smoke and the like appear in the sky. It is wrong to be angry at the sky on account of these flows of smoke and so forth. Thinking in this way, stop your anger, engaging in bodhisattva states. If doing harm to others is natural for the childish, it is wrong to get angry at them, just as it is at fire's burning nature. Still, if the fall is advantageous and the nature of being is good, my anger is wrong, and just as anger is smoke appearance in the sky. On analysis of whether the harm is direct or indirect, anger is unjustified. If you are angry at the agent of harm that directly inflicts the harm, you will have to be angry at the sick. Actually, just as you are at the person, if you are angry at the harm to her who indirectly inflicts harm, then just as the person impels the sick and so forth, do not harm. So hostility impels the person, therefore get angry at the hostility, engaging in the bodhisattva disease. The stick and the sofa directly cause the harm, but if I am angry at the one who throws it, then since hostility impels them, it is better to get angry at the hostility. If you are not angry at the stick, it is also wrong to be angry at the one who throws it. If you are angry with the one who throws it, it is correct to be angry also at the hostility. Not believing this, your mind has gone down a wrong path. Therefore, become certain about the all-over sameness of the logic here and direct your mind toward not being angry at the person in the same way that you are not angry at the stick. Furthermore, use the reasoning taught earlier that negate the idea that anything has self-control in order to understand that you should not differentiate between the stick and the one who throws the stick by whether they have a humble intent. Page number 164. Engaging in the bodhisattva distress, I at a former time inflicted harm such as this on living beings. Therefore, it is fitted that I hurt others. I should receive this. It is stated in the Fundamental to the Madhyamaka by Chandrakriti that if I repeat the harms that has been harmed on us, then will the action that has acted that has been inflicted on me will return back. That is not possible. When someone makes you angry or feel hostile towards them, then if you beat them or does something in return, but of course, the things that has harmed to you will not vanish or will not cease. But again, you develop a mind of hostility. You become angered towards that person. And in retaliation to that, and if you retaliated with violence, and of course in nowadays involved, through the violence, when somebody retaliate in to another violence, so violence after the violence comes, and there is no ending to it. For example, just like the guidance of the hell and the short-lived forest, I produce this sum with my own actions. So at whom should I get angry? Those who to me harm arise, impelled by my own karma. Is thereby they go to hell? Have I not ruined them? Also, Shabbos said, when you say I am not at fault, it indicates that you in fact have not internalized even a bit of the teaching. On analysis of the subject, anger is untestable. If you get angry at a harm to it through an inability to bear suffering, it is contradictory, because even as you are failing to bear slight suffering in the present, you are aggressively creating the cause of measureless suffering in the miserable realms. Therefore, induce a sense of embarrassment, thinking I'm very stupid, and vow to continue your anger, engaging in the bodhisattva distress. If I cannot endure even the slight suffering of the present, then why do I not stop my anger, the cause of suffering in the hells? The suffering generated by harm is the effect of previous bad karma. By experiencing it, you exhaust this karma. If you bear the suffering, you do not accumulate new sins and you will greatly increase your merit. Therefore, you must not consider how harm to you is ruining their virtue, but view them as kind in that it is though they are engaged in actions for the sake of clearing away your sins. The garland of birds says, I do not think about this person ruining this virtue, but that he is as if engaged in actions to clear away my sins. If I am not patient with even this person, how could I be any more unkind? As Chandrakriti's commentary on the Middle Way says, you want to say that you are exhausting the effects of non-virtuous karma done in the past. How then can you sow the seeds of further suffering by getting angry and harming others? Therefore, just as you tolerate bleeding or burning as a treatment to cure a serious illness, it is inappropriate to bear small suffering for the sake of preventing great suffering. On analysis of the basis, anger is unjustified. Analyzing the causes of harm and where the fault lies. Page 165, same page, the last paragraph, analyzing your commitment. Develop the fortitude of patience, thinking it is wrong for even saragas who act for their own purpose alone to be impatient and yet angry. So of course it is wrong for me. I committed myself to achieving the benefit and happiness of all living beings. When I generated the spirit of enlightenment, I acted for others' welfare and care for other beings. Also, Buddha was said, the Buddha's teaching is to commit no sin. When you fail to cultivate patience with a slight harm, you make the curse. May this eradicate the teaching. Thereby, you give up your vows, and this eradicates the teaching. We do not have the teaching as a whole. When we break our vows, we dissipate what we do have. And also, when a yak has been saddled up for carrying goods, if the saddle tightens around his tail, he buckles. He bucks and the saddle beats against his legs. If the saddle is loosened, the straps drop and the yak is heavy. Similarly, if you do not relax around the harm doer matches what you do, and you will certainly become more unhappy, showing that compassion is inappropriate. Contemplate from the depth of your heart. All living beings have been in cyclical existence since beginningless time, and there is no one who has not been my friend and relative, father, mother, etc. Being impermanent, they lose their lives and are miserable due to three types of suffering. Crushed by the demon of their afflictions, they destroy their own welfare in this and future lives. I must generate compassion for them. How could it be right to get angry or retaliate for harm? Stopping impatience with those who prevent your praise, fame, or honor, and with those who have contempt for you or say offensive or unpleasant things to you. Stopping impatience with those who prevent your praise and so forth, and with those who have contempt for you and so forth as stupas. Stopping impatience with those who prevent three things, praise, fame, and honor, has three parts. Reflection on how praise and so forth lack good qualities. When others praise you and spread your fame, it serves neither of the two purposes. For this life, it does not bring you long life, health, and the like, and for future lives, it does not bring merit and so forth. Therefore, do not get attached to fame and praise, but reproach yourself by thinking, my displeasure when my praise and fame are ruined is not different from when small children cry upon the clouds at their sand castle, which lack any of the requisites for a dwelling. Engaging in the bodhisattva distress, praise, fame, and honor do not cause merit, nor longevity, nor cause strength, nor health, nor bring physical well-being. Once I understand my own welfare, what meaning is there for me in those? And also, when their sandcastle collapses, children cry in great distress. Likewise, my mind is childish when my praise and fame are ruined. Reflection on how praise and so forth are false. So these kind of reasonings being explained here are all very evident. So it is something very evident to us, and it can generate faith and trust in us easily. patient martyred in 68, engaging in the bodhisattva disease. Therefore, are not those involved in destroying prayers of me and the like engaged in protecting me from falling into miserable realms. I diligently seek freedom and do not need the bonds of gain and honor. How could I get angry with those who freed me from bondage? I'm about to descend into suffering, but like the Buddha's blessing, they are giving me an opportunity to avoid it. How could I be angry with them? Engaging in the Bodhisattva disease. Since the mind is not physical, no one can ever destroy it. It is strongly object attached to the body, and so it is harmed by physical suffering. Contempt, offensive speech, and unpleasant words do not harm the body. Then why, mind, are you so angry? Sharava said, no matter what the three geshes, Kamlongpa, Nishurba, and Drapa, heard, it was no different from speaking to dirt and rocks. So they remain happy since everyone nowadays very quickly to what is said. They become unhappy. It was no different from speaking to dirt and rocks. So they remain happy. Since everyone nowadays very quickly to what is said, they become unhappy. When somebody whispered to Shudun, he said this and then that. Shudun replied, people also say things behind the king's back. You have committed divisive speech, so confess it. When someone said to the yogi Sherab Dorje, people are talking about us and saying that our attendants are 2 lakhs. He replied, well, the talk of the people will be about people. What else will they talk about? Thereafter, that person completely stopped the spread of his divisive speech. When someone has contempt for me, etc., other people will not like me, so this is why I'm unhappy about it. This will have some truth of others' dislike way to harm you. However, since a dislike does nothing to you, give up your unhappiness about others' contempt, engaging in the Bodhisattva disease. Others' dislike for me does not devour me. Is this or other lives? What am to averse to it? Indeed, I am not harmed by their dislike, but in dependence on it, I may be hindered in acquiring things from them. So I will get angry at those who have contempt for me, scorn me, or say unpleasant words to me. Even if you acquire things, you must leave them here, whereas the scene where your anger at them will follow you. Hence, of the two choices, dying quickly in destitution or living for a long time improperly, the former is better. Even if you acquire things and live for a long time, you must die since you are not liberated from death. At the time of death, it is the same whether you have enjoyed pleasure for the previous 100 years or enjoy it freely for 1 year, or both alternatives are nothing more than the mere objects of memory. And at that time, it makes no difference at all for your happiness or suffering. It is analogous to how in a dream the experience of pleasure for 100 years and the experience of a mere moment's pleasure have no difference at all with respect to your happiness or unhappiness at the time of waking. When you contemplate in this way and turn away from attachment to gain and honor, you will not become unhappy with unpleasant words and contempt. You have no interest in being special in the eyes of others, so you do not lose your contempt. Thus, engaging in the Bodhisattva disease, while I do not like contempt and so forth, because they interfere with my prosperity, I leave my acquisitions here, but firmly keep my sins. Better that I die today than live a long, improper life. Those like me might have a long time, but then there is only the suffering of death. Someone might wake from a dream after experiencing happiness for 100 years. Another might wake from a dream just experience happiness for a mere moment. For both persons, once they awaken, happiness does not return. It is like this at the time of death. Whether your life was long or short, after acquiring many things, I may enjoy pleasure for a long time, but just like one drop by a thief, I will live naked and empty-handed. Stopping both dislike for harm to his attainments and delight in their troubles, contemplate as follows, whether I have generated the spirit of enlightenment for the sake of accomplishing all living beings' benefit and happiness, I get angry at harm to us when they obtain happiness on their own. engaging in the Bodhisattva Ditsi. Since you want all beings to be happy, you have generated the spirit of enlightenment. Then when beings find happiness themselves, why do we get angry with them? If you wish to attain for living beings' welfare, Buddhahood, which is worshipped in the three worlds, why are you tormented when you see their most paltry gains or honor? When a relative finds sustenance for those whom you should nurture, objects of your care and generosity instead of being pleased, are you get angry again? If you do not wish even that for beings, how can you wish them enlightenment? Where is the spirit of enlightenment in someone who gets angry at others' attainments? Whether your enemy gets something from someone or it remains in the benefactor's house, it is never yours, so why be angry whether it is given or not? Even your mere malicious thoughts that delight in your enemy's troubles or that wish for the destruction to not harm in your enemy, they lead only to your sufferings. Yet if malice were to harm them, you should stop it completely, reflecting on the drawing back this will bring ruin to yourself and others. Engaging in the Bodhisattva distress, when my animals are unhappy, what I am to please about, my wishes alone will cause them no harm. Even if I should affect their suffering with my wish, what could I be pleased about? If I say I will be satisfied, what could be more ruinous? Once I am caught by the treble sharp hook cast by the fishermen, the afflictions, I will sure be cooked by the hell gardens in a kettle for the beings of all hell. You will be unhappy if you view as absolutely undesirable the obstacles what you and your friends want, moment and directions you do not want, and the prosperity of your enemies. If this unhappiness increases, you become hostile. If you stop your absolute dislike of these three things, you prevent unhappiness. Once you do this, you will not feel hostile. Thus, dispel your absolute dislike of this by using the reasoning previously taught. Take many approaches to stop your anger because it's a very tight fault. These instructions, the lines of reasoning of the conquerors and their children presented above, provide the techniques for defeating your greatest enemy, the anger. They involve arguing with your own afflictions and looking within yourself. When you analyze with discerning wisdom and stop anger with many lines of reasoning, you prevent many different types of anger and become patient in many ways. Developing the patience of accepting suffering. Developing the patience of accepting suffering has 3 points. The reason you must definitely accept suffering. Engaging in the Bodhisattva Ditsit, the causes of happiness sometimes occur, whereas the causes of suffering occur frequently. As you continuously experience whatever suffering is appropriate to you, you absolutely must know how to bring it to the bud. Otherwise, as the competitive training says, you either generate the hostility or you become discouraged about cultivating the path, either circumstance interfering with applying yourself to virtue. Moreover, some sufferings will be caused by others and some will be produced by your former karma. Whether or not you strive at the path, some as well will explain below occur when you engage in virtuous activity, but do not occur when you are not so engaged. For the time being, you cannot dispel the sufferings definitely produced by the power of former karma and immediate conditions. You must accept them when they arise, because if you do not do this, in addition to the basic sufferings, you have the suffering of worry that is produced by your own thoughts, and that the sufferings becomes very difficult for you to bear. If you accept the suffering, you let the basic suffering be and do not stop it. But you never have the suffering of worry that creates discontentment when you focus on the basic suffering. And since you are using a method to bring in the basic sufferings into the path, you greatly lessen your suffering so you can bear it. Therefore, it is very crucial that you generate the patience that accepts suffering. The way to develop acceptance has 2 parts. Rejecting the idea that when suffering occurs, it is absolutely unpleasant. If you can remedy a situation wherein suffering occurs, you do not need to feel that it is unpleasant. If you cannot remedy it, it is not helpful to find it unpleasant. So there is no need for effectiveness or your displeasure. There is even a disadvantage. Engaging in the Bodhisattva Ditsi, if there is a remedy, why be displeased? If there is no remedy, what is the use of being displeased? And also, I shall not be impatient with heat, cold, wind and rain, illness, bondage, beatings and so on, if I am the harm increases. Showing that it is inappropriate to accept suffering has 3 parts, reflecting on the good qualities of suffering. Suffering has 5 qualities. The good quality of suffering, you into liberation. This is because if you have no suffering, you will not develop the determination to be free of it. The good quality of dispelling arrogance. This is because the suffering strikes you, it reduces your sense of superiority. The good quality of causing you to shun sin. This is because when you experience very painful feelings, they arise from non-virtue. So if you do not want these effects, you must avoid their causes. the good quality of causing you to like cultivating virtue. This is because when you are tormented with suffering, you desire happiness, and once you want it, you must cultivate the virtue that causes it. The good quality of producing compassion for those who wander inside the existence. This is because after you have accessed your own situation, you think other beings suffer like this. From these five and what they have indicated, recognize other good qualities and on, and then repeatedly train your mind to think, their suffering is a condition that I want. As engaged in the Bodhisattva, it says, since without suffering there is no determination to be free, you mind stay fixed. And also, furthermore, the good qualities of suffering are that you dispel arrogance with disenchantment, develop compassion for the beings of sightly existence, carefully avoid sin, and delight in virtue. Reflecting on the advantages of bearing suffering's hardship as two paths, repeatedly make your mind steadfast, thinking, I know that in the past, while passing through sightly existence, I suffer for the sake of trembling desires and my knownness, yet I disregarded the many sufferings undergoing a great deal of purposeless suffering that will in turn cause immeasurable suffering for me in my future lives. Engaging in the Bodhisattva's deed says, for the sake of my desires I have experienced being burned, etc., in thousands of times in the hells, but have not achieved either my own welfare or the welfare of others. This is not as harmful as that. It achieves great purpose. It is a correct cure only to be delighted in suffering that clears away all beings' hurt. Thus, after you reflect on how you have previously created only hardship that you do not accomplish any of all no others, aim afflict your mind thinking, why am I not now bearing a suffering that achieves great purpose? Although I am suffering, how excellent that I have found something like this to do. Moreover, develop a fearless attitude toward hardship, thinking how you are misled by bad teachers through ignoble, purposeful paths whereon five fires and the like, and also think about how for the sake of inferior mundane purposes you have made yourself bear many sufferings in farming business and war. Reflect well on the difference between short-term and long-term suffering, thinking a man who is to be executed is overjoyed when he is freed from execution by having merely his finger cut off. How excellent it will be if similarly by means of this slight suffering of human hardship, I could permanently dispel the suffering of limitless cyclic existence in general, in particular the suffering of immeasurable rebirths such as the hell, etc. If you do this well, you produce fearless courage with respect to hardship. Engage in the Bodhisattva disease. How is it unfortunate if a man who is to be executed is freed from death by having this hand cut off? How is it unfortunate if human suffering you are released from hell? Engaging in the Bodhisattva distress, there is nothing whatsoever that does not become easier through habituation. So by becoming used to small harms, you will bear great harms as well. After you have conceived the armor-like thought to be accept suffering, you are gradually blended with the suffering, starting with small sufferings. When you do this, you steadily increase your capacity to accept suffering. The compendium of training says once you have first grown used to small sufferings, you will become accustomed to the difficulty and very difficult. For example, just as all living beings have the idea that suffering is happiness through the power of conditioning, so you maintain the idea of joy whenever you experience suffering by becoming used to applying the idea of joy to these experiences. As to how this comes about, the questions of householder Ugra Sutra says, free yourself from a mind that is like a piece of cotton, and the array of self sutra says, daughter, in order to destroy all afflictions, you should develop a mind that is hard to defeat. Thus, you need courage that is very firm and stable. You will not be able to accept suffering with a fragile mind. Engaging in the Bodhisattva disease. Some seeing their own blood become more intrepid. Some seeing others' blood fall unconscious. This comes from the mind's fortitude or from its timidity. A detailed explanation from the viewpoint of the basis, given that one must accept the suffering that occurs, from where do these sufferings come and how does one accept them? There are eight bases for accepting sufferings. Acceptance of suffering that is based on objects, ropes, arms, bedding, seat, medicine, and necessary objects that enhance pure contact. Without displeasure and disappointment, you accept the suffering that arises when these are given to you and you find them to be inferior or too few, or when you are given with disrespect or after a long delay. Acceptance of suffering that is based on worldly concerns. The nine worldly concerns are loss, disgrace, blame, pain, disintegration, extinguishment, aching, sickness, and the death of what is subjected, death subsequent to its decay. After you have analyzed the sufferings based on all or each of these, you accept the suffering. Acceptance of suffering that is based on physical activities. The four physical activities are moving around, standing, sitting, and lying down. when all day and all night you purify your mind from obstructions by means of first and third of these four, you are accepting the sufferings that arise from them. However, if you do not relax on a couch, chair, or bed of straw or leaves, when it is not the time to do so, acceptance of suffering that is based on upholding the teaching. The teaching is offered in seven ways by worshipping and serving the three jewels, worshipping and serving the Guru, understanding the teachings, teaching extensively to others what you have understood, reciting the praises in a loud, clear voice, correctly reflecting on it in solitude, cultivating a meditative serenity and insight that is imbued with yogic attention. When you strive at this, you accept the sufferings that arise. Acceptance of suffering that is based on living by begging. The seven aspects of living by begging are: you experience having an ugly appearance due to shaving of your hair, you experience wearing clothes that is patched together and so poor color, you live by restraining yourself from the contact of worldly persons and acted in a way other than you do, you give a farm work accidentally by getting material goods from others, so you live in dependence of others. Since you do not accumulate or employ material gain, you seek things such as robes from others for as long as you live. Since you give up sexual intercourse, you turn away from human desires until you die. And since you give up dancing, laughter, and the lie, you turn away from human maritime until you die in order to give up friends, intimate companions, and childhood friends, and the like, as well as pleasures and enjoyment. You accept the sufferings that come about based on this. Acceptance of suffering that is based on fatigue due to perseverance. Acceptance of suffering that is based on acting for welfare of living beings. Acceptance of suffering that is based on current tasks. Developing the patience of certitude about teachings. The patience of certitude about teachings means generating the forbearance of conviction. It has eight objects: the object of faith, the object to be actualized, the desired object, the object to be adopted, the object to be discarded, the object of meditation, that is goal to be achieved, the object of meditation, that is the method for achieving the goal, the object of subsequent practice through study and reflection. According to Tomlungpa, page number 179, this refers to province of what is to be known, such as impermanence and so forth. The power lineage chapter of the Bodhisattva levels mentioned at 8 is a sublime teaching, the 12 branches of scripture and so forth. So I think you have to take it as being this. The way to have conviction is to become certain about these objects just as they are, and then to think about them again and again, apprehending them without conflict. In accordance with passages in the Bodhisattva levels I have set forth, the set of 8 bases with respect to the patience of accepting suffering and 8 objects with respect to the patience of certitude about teachings. In particular, there is extensive coverage there of the patience of certitude about the teachings. How to practice? When practicing any kind of patience, you practice it in association with the 6 supremacies and all 6 perfections. These are the same as in the earlier explanation, except the generosity of patience means to establish others in patience. A summary, the recollection and cultivation of the spirit of enlightenment. The basis of Bodhisattva deeds is the root of which to establish all beings and the patience, wherein they have extinguished the contaminations. After you steadily increase this spirit, aspire to practice the patience of those at high levels, and then train your mind. Distinguish the train for the patience of a beginner Bodhisattva, then learn this properly. If you transgress the boundaries as well, you must make an effort to amend this. You will bring the perfection of patience to completion, the little difficulty and minor suffering. So I will end here. So when you recite the mantle offering, just one verse, and after that, the prayer for the flourish of all the teachings, and also the qualities of the limitless qualities. In between here, I have an important announcement. The final announcement: the teaching will begin at Drepung Losaling Prayer Hall tomorrow morning at the same time. Seat reservations at Drepung Losaling Prayer Hall will open tonight at approximately 7 p.m. The foreigner seating will be similar to here in Ganden. Indian, Chinese, and English, Russian, Mongolian, and Vietnamese will be inside of the main prayer hall. Korean, Italian, French, and Spanish will be upstairs or looking the prayer hall. This ground anointed with perfume, steamed with flowers, Mount Meru, four continents and sun and moon, I imagine as a Buddha land and offer to you. May all beings enjoy in this pure land. By accumulating through long effort,
seed selections may begin earlier between 6 and 7.
Another important announcement, there is a small changes. Seed selection may begin a little bit earlier between 6 and 7, so it's better for all of you to be present there at the gates around 6 o'clock. I'll repeat again. The seat reservation at Drepung Losoling Prayer Hall may open tonight a little bit earlier than earlier announced, around 6 p.m. Thank you. By accumulating through long effort, the two collections as vast as the sky, may I become the chief of the conquerors, guide of all beings whose minds are blinded by ignorance. Also, in all lives until I reach that point, may Manjugosha look after me with loving kindness. After I find the supreme path complete in the stages of teaching, by accomplishing it, may I please the conquerors. By skill in means inspired by strong loving kindness, may the vital points of the path that I precisely know clear away the mental darkness of beings, may I then uphold the concrete teachings for a long time. In regions where the supreme precious teachings are not spread, or where it is spread but then declined, may I illuminate the treasure of happiness and benefit with a mind deeply moved by great compassion. May this treatise on the stages of path to enlightenment, well founded on the wondrous deeds of conquerors and their children, bring glory to the minds of those who want to be free and long preserve the conquerors' achievements.
Namo Jaya.
As for all who provide conditions that support integration of the good path and clear away conditions that inhibit that integration, whether they are human or not, may they never be separated in all their lifetimes from the pure but praised by the conquerors. When I strive to properly achieve the supreme vehicle through the 10 deeds of the teaching, may I be accompanied always by those who have power, and may an ocean of good fortune pervade all directions. Next, the prayer of the words of truth, composed by His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. Namo Ratna Trayaya, homage to Triple Gem, magnificent masters of an ocean of limitless good qualities. Those gone to bliss of the three times, your children and disciples, looking upon destitute migrators like your only child, please pay attention to my true words of sorrow. Explain the doctrine of the completely perfect capable one, which removes the suffering of cyclic existence, solitary peace, for abundant extreme welfare and happiness in Jambudeva. Increase the 10 kinds of Dhamma content for all those learned and accomplished holders of the doctrine. By pacifying all the unbearable dangers of sickness, weapons and famine, cause those migrators totally compelled by intolerant strong karma, stricken by the torture of sufferings without respect, to recover their birth in an ocean of happiness and joy, particularly for all the migrators beings in the religious snowland oppressed with evil actions by the barbarian hordes from the black side. Devoid of love, may your power of compassion arise and quickly stop the flow of blood and tears. May all the unruly groups of people maddened by the demon of afflicted emotions, who by their rough behavior ruin themselves and others, fully obtain the eye which sees the object of compassion and often magnificent love and kindness. The wish that since long time dwells in our heart is the glorious complete freedom from the entire Tibetan country. Best to assume the fortune to enjoy the celebration of spontaneous religious and secular harmony. All the people who completely give up their cherished body, life and possessions and endure hundreds of hardships for the sake of the doctrine, its holders, their country and their compatriots, may they be guarded by the compassion of the protector of the Bodhala. In short, may the good fruit of any extensive prayer to fully protect the land of snows, met by powerful protective cherishing in the presence of the Buddhas and their children, appear soon here and now, by the interdependence of the profound suchness of appearance and emptiness, by power of the three sublimes, compassion and the force of true words, by the power of truth of infallible action and result, may our prayer of truth be fulfilled soon and without obstacles.
Yāzu jāngzhī zāvīn bēlāsh, rīnē nīndō nābīn dībī, yāzu bēchūng rāvā zāvī, lēngzhū chīsī sūndhī kādhī, chībī jēsāng yūvā nīdōs, dēlāng dēzī chāvzī rāvī, chībī lūsū lōngchī yōndās, Kawa dhāta trūpe jīvū, trūsīn kundi tūjī yungvās, dhāna kumbhū chīrī sīvā, sīcī dhāvī chīngā kāñcī, nūsū dhāchī nīngū kāñcī, tēsā dhīndi nyūdhū chāvās, nāndhū chīnī sāmi dhīntrī, Doce Duda Dense Do Lente Lume Dente Dase
May the teachings of Buddha spread to all parts of the world, and all those the great masters who uphold the teachings may have long life. and may all the sentient beings have the ultimate happiness, and may the teachings be spread all over the world.